Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
Welcome to the Thriving Marriage Podcast. My name, of course, is Mark Johnston. With me is Heather Cho. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really well. Glad that technology is working and we're excited to be here.
Yeah, exactly. So we're actually really excited about today's topic. Today we are going to be doing a live communication assessment, right?
Yes. I had this brilliant idea at the end of our podcast last week that we just put together this really cool form, which helps people know if they can open up communication, even if it's closed off, even if you're wondering, like, my spouse is blocking my text, how can we get that open? And so thought, hey, why don't we just ask some of these assessment questions with you guys live, and then you can find out where you are with your communication currently, and if it's possible to open up communication more. Mark, you know, we get a lot of questions here with, you know, having such a large audience and such a big Facebook group and, of course, so many clients. And one of the most common questions we get is, how do I get communication open? How do I get her to talk to me again? How do I bring up this big, you know, subject that we keep avoiding? Or how do I reduce the anger and the, you know, the volatility in our communication? So we're going to go into that today.
I'm excited. Before we get into that, though, I think we do have a client win that we wanted to share. So this one is going to be anonymous this week. We are looking through some of the posts in our Thriving Marriage group, and we have one that looked really nice. This person says that the marriage reboot works. My husband says he wants to make things work. He swept me away for a night for my birthday in another city for dinner and pampering, breakfast in bed, and back home to cake and kids and cards that made me cry. This program works. It's been about 6 months separated in the same house. So this person went from being separated in the same house. And I know a lot of people describe to me this sort of situation. I can imagine a scenario where they're sleeping, your spouse is sleeping in another room. You're not talking a whole lot. They might even be talking about other bigger plans to separate. Going from that 6 months later to, you know, really special night out with her husband is a big difference. And we might say, okay, well, 6 months is a long time. You know, in the grand scheme of things, it's really not. And I think, you know, this is an excellent example of some results here.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. All right. Well, I wanted to try to get on to our Facebook group. If you're not a member of our Facebook group, it's the Thriving Marriage. And I want to try to post this link. So as I do that, Mark, why don't you give us a little high-level overview of what some of the most common communication challenges are, and then we're going to go into kind of dissecting them a little bit more.
Yeah. So I think Heather and my aim for today was to, you know, take a look at some of these communication problems and see where all of you are at. If you're following along, we're going to explain some of the questions that are on here and, you know, why some of these things might be significant. A lot of times, if there are communication problems, it's very likely, you know, there's a few reasons that this could be. Perhaps there's been some resentment that's been building up. You know, I know here with our PATH program, we talk a lot about the narrative that's been developed. And so if there's been an unhealthy narrative that's been built up, say something surrounding, like, my partner doesn't listen to me, they try to control me, any sort of these really strong negative views about each other, it's really going to shut down communication. Even further, if you have lots of arguments, I mean, there's so many things that can shut communication down, whether it's high amounts of tension, low amounts of connection, or whether there's been resentment built up, criticism, there's all sorts of things. And so today we want to kind of go over some of these and help you to assess where are you at in terms of your ability to communicate and connect. So if you are having some sort of problems communicating, I think you should probably listen in today.
Sound advice. All right, cool. So here's the form. If you're over in Facebook, I can see some of you watching live, so welcome. If you want to go through the actual assessment with us with the form, it's just like a Google form. It's going to help analyze where you're at in your communication and what maybe the biggest blocks are for you. And then what the next steps are, if you can open up communication. So you can go ahead and do that. And then if you're listening to the replay, we'll make sure that we put it in the notes there on the podcast replay or the email if you guys are getting the email. So you guys should be able to grab that form if you want to go through it with us live. So first question, we're going to hit the ground running here. And it is, what is your main communication problem? All right. So based on your answers, of course, we can't really hear your answers right now, but if you fill out the form, then we'll be able to help you improve understanding and connection. So some of the most common things we see, the options here are, they won't talk to me. Our communication is angry, volatile. They avoid important topics and discussions, which means maybe things are surface level. Maybe you even have an amount of respect or friendship, but they have resistance to going deep in some things. I don't trust what they say or do, or they don't trust what I say or do. So of those options, which do you feel like fits you best?
I think these answers are interesting. I would say that that third one, they avoid important topics and discussions, really kind of tells where the couple is at in terms of problems in their relationship. I mean, there's other things that can affect this, and certainly it requires more examination after this. But I would say, you know, this is a sort of problem that a lot of couples will see throughout their relationship, but will cause bigger problems later on down the line. So it's kind of like this middle point where the couple is not connecting super well, but it hasn't gotten to the point where it's blowing up and falling apart quite yet, where some of the other answers might indicate that. Not that those other positions are unfixable, it's just, it's kind of gives a little bit of a spectrum here. Because if you're at this point where you're saying, I can't trust what they say or do, or they don't trust me, or they won't talk to me, this is indicating that the communication has broken down more. It's just what flavor of it is going on.
Right. Choose your poison, right? And we can laugh about that, but you know, Mark and I, we've definitely had our marriage struggles ourselves. And so we understand what it's like when your spouse kind of shuts you out, or when they kind of turn everything you say, everything you say around and make it negative or blaming, right? And so we've been there ourselves, as well as many, many of our clients. So you're not alone.
Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting. Like, we might make light of something like this, but a lot of it's because it's, you know, talking about these big problems like this, this is just another Tuesday for us. So it's like, this is our normal topic of conversation. And yeah, I think I sometimes forget, I draw a blank that this is a really important thing, and this is a really serious thing for many people. So we don't mean to like make light of this.
At the same time, humor is healing too.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It's okay to laugh.
It's one of those things, like, we've all kind of been there at one point or another. And a really important thing to understand about communication is that it is one of the biggest challenges in marriage, because we aren't taught how to communicate. We aren't taught how to understand one another. We aren't taught how to resolve major trust issues. We aren't taught how to have a conversation about the affair, right? These are things that simply aren't taught to us most of the time. Usually it wasn't modeled by our parents, right? Usually not. If your parents did, that's awesome. But it's very, very rare that your, you know, parents modeled great communication and great relationship skills. And we tend to continue the same patterns that we learned from our upbringing. That's just human nature. That's how the brain develops as children. And it's definitely not modeled in our culture or our society. And there aren't a lot of resources. We aren't taught in school how to handle conflict, how to have conflict resolution, or emotional intelligence, right? And so these are things that aren't taught. So give yourself a little bit of grace too, that you haven't known until now, but now you can learn these skills. And Mark, I know that we could say with certainty that they are skills that you can learn. It is possible. And no matter who you are, no matter what your background was, no matter what culture you are, there are things that you can learn. And we've seen it happen so many times with so many thousands of people that went from struggling to communicate, struggling to understand or have empathy, struggling to feel heard or feel safe to have a voice, anything along that spectrum, right? We're talking about the whole spectrum here, but these are things that you absolutely can learn.
Exactly. Yeah, I would agree. These things can be learned. It's just, they just aren't taught usually.
Yeah.
So our second question here, what level of communication do you currently have? And it talks about here some of the answers. We speak face-to-face every day, once or more a week. We only text or call. I try to communicate with them, but they block or ignore me. We haven't communicated at all in the past, 1 or 2 months or more. This, I think, is an important factor because this really kind of determines where or what you, how you need to approach communication in your relationship. If you haven't really been communicating much at all, or they're blocking or texting you, once again, here's this spectrum, and it indicates there's a lot of hurt there, and you need to approach it a little bit differently than if you have some cordial communication. You know, if you're speaking face-to-face every day, there's probably room for some amount of lightness or levity, making jokes, a little bit of flirtation. Whereas if they only receive text messages from you, it indicates a different level of comfort in communication, and you need a different approach. So this is a really important question. And even if they're blocking you and not communicating whatsoever, there's a few things that you can try. But, I think sometimes you and I, Heather, we talk about if there's no communication, this is a very difficult situation to affect until that shifts a little bit.
Right. And that's why I'm so glad you brought that up, because it is truly a custom tailored approach. And that's why we have this assessment and help you get clarity on what's going on for you, because based on your answers, that helps us see what is possible. The person that is speaking every day and is in the friendship mode, but just can't go deep, like Mark said, we're going to help you guide you on how to help open up that and find out what that resistance is. And that's going to be a very, very different approach than the person that's having an affair, has blocked you, and they don't want to talk to you at all and wants a divorce, right? And you only speak, maybe every couple times a month, or you haven't spoken for 6 months in a year. I just spoke to a gentleman whose wife had taken their son out of the country, and he hadn't spoke to her at all in any form for 6 months. And now he's trying to go through the in-laws to get connection with his wife and his son. And so that obviously is a very different approach than the person that's just friendship or surface level. So that's why we never want to give a cookie cutter approach to these situations. We do want to try to give you as many high level principles that could help you in your situation that apply. But when it really comes down to it, this is like a doctor's diagnosis, right? We're kind of like filling out your medical assessment sheet at the very beginning. This is very preliminary stuff that we can then use to properly diagnose exactly what's going on. Having gone through many medical things myself, I know that just having, say high blood pressure when you're pregnant could mean you're just stressed, or it could mean you have preeclampsia and you need to go get blood work done. So the same symptom by itself isn't enough, right? We need to go deeper and find out the whole picture as much as possibly can, because then the treatment going forward is going to be a lot different. And that's why it's so crucial that you get specific guidance and specific diagnosis to your situation.
Okay, the next question here, on a scale of 1 to 10, how good would you say your communication is? And a little bit of this is actually based off of what I'd call different levels of intimacy. It's not quite the same, but it kind of gets around about the same sort of thing. This is more, what do you talk about as opposed to how frequently you speak? So I'm going to give the quick overview of different levels of intimacy. I sometimes I mean, this is going on a 1 to 10 scale, but like very basic communication, like a typically a level one is like the kind of interaction between you and like a checkout clerk. Like you might ask them about their day, but you don't actually care. I don't know about you. I'm going to ask the cashier how they're doing, but it doesn't really, you know, when they say have a good day when I part, I don't like go and think about that later and be like, oh, they really care about me. It didn't mean anything.
Right.
Level two is an ability to discuss business facts, important information that's needed, but not much else. Whereas level three, it's much more of a discussion of opinions. I can discuss things that are outside of myself and judge them. So I can say, I really like that movie. I like this, our kid is doing really well. You know, we can talk about that, but I'm not really sharing a whole lot of my own personal feelings about myself or about you. Whereas level four bridges that gap. It's much more interpersonal and, we can discuss, say, our relationship. We can discuss more personal feelings. We can make judgments about ourselves or about our partner in some way, positive or negative. Whereas level five, the deepest level of intimacy is an ability to open up and be vulnerable, to discuss problems and mistakes, and for that to be enriching and rewarding in some way. So this question, where it's not exactly this, it's kind of has a bit of a correlation to that. And it talks about, hey, we want to just, you know, in terms of our communication, we want to deepen intimacy and understand things better, all the way down to, hey, we can't even have a conversation about even the simplest things.
Yeah, that is escalating into a fight or a disagreement.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that kind of helps, again, know what the deeper issues are that are going on. One thing that we really focus on here, Mark and I, that was foundational to our program and our company, wasn't just focusing on a surface level, but going deeper into what the root issues are. However, that is true. But a big mistake a lot of people make is rushing to push to resolve deeper issues too mm-hmm. soon. And the relationship isn't ready or isn't strong enough yet to handle having those deeper conversations and those deeper root issues resolved. And I get it. Like if your spouse is having an affair, you're like, I want to know why. Why did you do this? And how can we stop it? And you immediately like push for those things. But what happens is it tends to backfire. And so it's really important to understand where we are and then seeing if it's healthy enough to have certain levels of conversation. Ultimately, we will help you get to the level where your relationship is strong enough and it won't backfire to have those deeper root issue type of conversations so that those deeper root issues will heal, because they must heal in order for you to go forward and have a happy, healthy, thriving marriage, right? And so there's a time and a place for that. So be really careful with understanding the level of health and strength of your relationship and the things that may backfire or be completely ineffective in your relationship right now. And get that guidance there. Is my relationship ready to have this deep level conversation? If it is, cool. How do I go about doing that in the most effective way, right? And so that it can actually cause healing and resolution here. And if it's not, then you're going to have to put on the brakes and you're going to have to do some other things first to build that relationship health up to the point where it can handle that.
Exactly. All right. We'll just keep going through questions here. The next one here says, let's go a bit deeper into what might be causing these communication challenges. Are any of these your situation? And that gives several bigger problems, like my spouse has blocked my phone number and I can't text him or her. There are currently hard drug issues and, you know, going on in the relationship. It lists other problems. There's severe depression, a diagnosis of narcissism, a restraining order. My spouse is living with their affair partner and they're saying there's no way of getting back together. One of the reason why we put this in here is we want to assess, okay, are there any really major obstacles that are going to prevent progress unless we do something drastic with this? So for instance, while this isn't 100% a deal breaker, if there's a major diagnosis of like an extreme personality disorder, like narcissism, narcissistic personality disorder, it's going to really shift how we approach the situation. If your spouse has a restraining order on you, which oddly enough, we actually have had a fair amount of clients who had restraining orders and wanted help. But it does shift how we're going to approach this because, you know, legally, if you're not allowed to contact them, then there's going to need to be a lot of self-work first until, you know, that can be resolved. But a lot of these issues are really big problems that really are going to shift a lot of this, usually more towards personal work, personal development, until those bigger problems can somehow be resolved. And we've actually helped a lot of people resolve things like my spouse is blocking my phone number. Well,
yeah,
I'm not going to say 100% we can get around that, but we've helped many people in that situation. I'm just saying, like, I don't want to give promises, like if they're blocking your phone number and they won't talk to you, I mean, there's only so much that we can do, but we have helped a fair amount of people in that situation. I'm just saying, hey, you got to understand some of these things are really serious and are difficult to get around at times.
Right. And that's one thing, is that we're not here to like pump you full of false hope. You know, we're not going to give you any BS. We're going to give it to you guys really straight, but that's why we need to know what's really going on. And I think more often than not, people have less hope about their situation, and they're just in a place, you know, not where there's hard drug issues or alcoholism or, and we've helped many people with all those, right? Or that their spouse hasn't blocked their number. It's just that their spouse says, I want out. And then they think there's no hope. And so while we don't want to give you BS, we also want to show you that there is so much possibility. There is so much possibility if you have the ability to talk face-to-face one or two times a month, one or two times a week. Right? There is so much hope, more than what you possibly recognize. But we're never going to tell you, yes, you can save your marriage if it isn't possible. We're going to give it to you guys straight. So knowing that, we're going to go here to the last question that we're going to go through with the live communication assessment. And I really think this question could be really overlooked. Okay. But it's really important. From 1 to 100, like a scale there, 1 to 100, how important is it for you to open up communication and build positive connection with your spouse? Now, I can see some of you on Facebook have been answering. Awesome. Thank you. I see that one of our clients says she's finally at stage 5, thanks to you and your team, which is awesome, but still dealing with some trusting issues. We have another person said, we both use drugs. I'm an addict, right? All these different things. And so that's going to add other layers that need to be resolved as we go through this journey with you. It doesn't mean that there isn't hope. It just means that there's going to be, like Mark said, a little more work that needs to be done there versus someone that's just, you know, our client Wynn, living in the same home, but separated in the same home, just different situation. So we don't give a cookie cutter approach, but let me know, how important is it to you to build up communication and positive connection with your spouse? Why is that important, Mark? Why is it important to say this matters to me and I'm willing to do some different things so I get some different results?
Well, I will tell you one of the most defining features of where we see success versus not is in how, I'm trying to word this carefully, how dedicated, how open to suggestions, how open to coaching the client is. If this is a person who says, this is very important to me and I'm going to do whatever it takes, that those are generally the people that see results much more often than those that aren't. It was a few weeks back that I was talking to Venus here on the podcast, and I remember one of the comments that she made, She's like saying, hey, you know, I was a little bit concerned, but she's like, I made a decision. I'm just going to do what they tell me to do and then trust in that. And she really did. She dove into the work and really made sure that she worked hard on it. And then she saw the results. And those are the, you know, there's just no getting around it. If you put in more effort and more work, you're much, much more likely to see more results from it. And so this is a little bit of an indicator, like, okay, how excited are you? Because I do get clients who get on that first call with me and they're like, well, I'm not sure if I actually really want the marriage myself. It's been a bit rough and I'm just seeing what can be done. And I'm in the back of my head, I'm thinking, ah, this is going to be a struggle here.
Right. At the same time, like it is, because then we not only do you have to build belief up in your marriage, but you have to build up belief in yourself. That really comes from a defense mechanism, though, that you have, because you don't want to get hurt. Maybe you've been going about it the wrong ways and you're just exhausted. Or maybe you thought they were the right ways and you feel like, I'm doing all the work. I'm not even sure I want to keep doing this. I'm exhausted. And know that you're not alone in that. And many of our clients do kind of go between those two dynamics of, this really matters to me. I really want to do it, but I'm tired and I'm not even sure if I can keep going. And that is why it's so crucial that we get a vision of what we really want in our life, who we really want to be, and that we learn some emotional intelligence is the new word for it, but it's emotional processing. It's so everyone's going to react, right? We're going to have human reactions, but it's how long is that reaction going to continue? And that's a choice. It can continue for a few minutes, even a few seconds, maybe a little bit longer if needed, if it's something you really got to work through, but choosing to have that same emotional reaction from one event go on for weeks, months, years, and the inability to move forward from that is ultimately a choice. And we don't often realize it. So it's learning emotional intelligence so we can process through our reactions and get to a better place that's going to actually move us forward from things rather than getting us stuck in the same place for so long.
Now, I want to make a comment here, on a further comment on this question. Now, when I was talking about like, hey, we see more results from people who are more dedicated, that doesn't mean that if you're feeling a bit ambivalent, that there's nothing that can be done. It's, once again, Heather is talking about, we don't have a cookie cutter approach.
Right.
It just means that if you're feeling a bit back and forth on this, that just means that that's something that we need to explore. And, you know, I really, you know, my approach, I really like to be supportive of, where people are at. If they're feeling a bit ambivalent, I want to explore that with you. At the same time, if you tell me that you're feeling ambivalent, but you really want to see what can make this work, we like to push you and we're going to hold you accountable to that if that's the decision you're making.
Right. Awesome. So let's do one more question that I want you guys to think about as you're joining us. And I love that we're doing this live because I think it gives some space for people to really dig in and get some clarity on where they're at. So I hope that you're enjoying this and participating. So where would you really love for your communication to be? Truly, if you could just wipe the slate clean for a minute. Okay. I've got a magic fairy wand, not really, but pretend, right? And we could make it anything we wanted it to be. What would it look like? How would you love to come home at the end of the day? How would you, you know, what kind of expression on your spouse's face would you like to see? What kind of conversations would you love to have? What would be the tone of your voice? What would be the tone of their voice? How would you connect? Would you be able to talk about anything? Would they want to spend time with you? Like, really get into what that would look like. How would you respect each other? How would you show understanding? How would you show compassion? How would you show forgiveness? And really get into what that looks like for you. Where do you want your communication to be with your spouse and in your relationships going forward? How do you want to learn how to process your own emotions, right? Do you want to get stuck in anger and fear and pain for weeks and months and years, and maybe your whole life, right? Or do you want to learn how to do things a different way? Because when we learn how to do things a different way, then we get different results. Like we said at the beginning, these are skills that can be learned. They can be learned and you can do it. And we're here to help you along the way. My final thought here before we go on to Marriage Mythbuster is that there's a saying in race car driving that you don't look at the wall. The trainers for these NASCAR races, racers and, you know, Formula One drivers. And I guess there's, was it E3 is the new one coming out? I don't know. My teenager was trying to tell me about it. I don't know what it is. Anyway, they're supposedly really cool and really fast. But the trainers teach their drivers to not look at the wall. Why would they do that? Well, they know that if their drivers look at the wall, because they're always afraid of hitting the wall, right? They're going on those kind of speeds. It doesn't end well for them. If they look at the wall, where are they going? They're going straight into that wall. And so they teach them to focus on where they're going rather than looking at the wall. And so for you guys, I encourage you to look at the opportunities rather than the obstacles. One thing I love about Mark and the coaches here that we have is that they see the opportunities that you may be completely missing. I get it that when your spouse, you say something and they text you back and they say, I know, just move on. I'm done. Don't ever text me again. You see that as an obstacle, right? But the fact that they're even texting you back is actually an opportunity. And there are probably way more opportunities that you have that you don't even realize. We just need to use those opportunities in a different way so we start to get a different result. And we can guide you on exactly how to do that, what to text back to them, what to say. So focus on where you want to go. Focus on the opportunities and not the obstacles.
Right. So Heather, you know, we've gone through a bunch of these questions now, and you know, I hope you can kind of get the picture of, you know, all of those that are following along. I hope you can get the picture of perhaps where you are at in terms of some of your communication, your some problem areas or your ability to connect. If you're needing a little bit of help guiding yourself along the right path here, if you're looking to perhaps see what more can be done, of course, we are here for that. You know, that's what, one of the reasons why, you know, we're putting this out here is so we can tell you, hey, look, if you're having problems with this, you know, come and get some help. You can either just let us know in the comments and we can have someone reach out to you. You can also just go and sign up for, you know, a free consultation call over at our website, www.highthrivecoaching.com/apply. We'd love to talk to you.
Awesome. Yeah. And then for everyone who feels so inclined, go ahead and fill out that form as well on this communication so that we can help kind of diagnose what's going on and see if it's possible for you to open up more communication, help you see some of those opportunities that you may not recognize are actually opportunities. Again, there's probably more hope than you realize. And if not, we'll let you know. It's okay. So, awesome. Let's move on to our marriage mythbuster. Our marriage mythbuster is conflict is a sign that you're in a bad relationship. Hmm. If you're having conflict, the relationship must be bad.
I think this is an interesting one. Now, I like to kind of base my views on some, you know, I like to look at a lot of different theories out there and see where there's some amount of common principles. You know, if there's a lot of different theories that have very similar ideas, that it feels good to me. In this case, you know, one of the theories that, you know, I'd go off of with this is the idea of, you know, different conflict types. This is kind of an idea, you know, we reference Gottman quite a bit. And he talks about different types of, I'm going to blank on the actual term that he uses. I want to say conflict resolution types and different types of pairing. The thing is, you know, one of the things that he says is that there are certain types of couples that might have a high amount of conflict, and it's not a bad thing. He calls this volatile pairing. And if you have that kind of pairing, it's actually a fairly stable type of relationship. You might have these intense conflicts, but the thing that tends to balance those relationships out is this tendency to have intense conflicts and then have really intense making up. So think just the idea that conflict is a sign that you're in a bad relationship isn't quite accurate. Now, where it might be, and so like this is this myth is partially true. Where it does tend to create problems, and I'm going to reference back to Gottman's idea, is where you have someone who is a very volatile person with someone who is, you know, much more passive or quiet or tends to like to avoid problems. And when you have this mix, it tends to result in the more passive partner feeling a bit steamrolled and, you know, building up a lot of resentment. And we'll typically go through these cycles of building up resentment and then exploding. This is not terribly dissimilar from a topic that Heather, you and I were discussing several weeks ago about the pursuer-avoider sort of dynamic. It's somewhat related to it, but not quite. This is more like how does one resolve conflicts? In my opinion, you know, we have another sort of theory that I want to reference. And this is an idea of a trajectory of a relationship where, you know, at first we have many relationships, they build up and they have more connections and they're very close. And then there's a tendency for a couple to plateau for a bit. And then if they're going to decline, it usually starts off with more conflict leading to more apathy in a relationship and disconnection. And the myth is once again false in this case, because I would there's this that initial drop off is where we tend to see more conflict. And it's this situation where you're just starting to drop off, you're still in those early stages of decline where the conflict is likely to happen. So in reality, it's not such a sign that you're in a bad relationship. It's more a sign that you are beginning that descent and it's not completely gone. So what I'm getting at here is there's a lot of different factors to look at when you're saying, is conflict bad in a relationship? And, you know, I get into these scenarios where someone comes in and says, you know, we never fight at all. And immediately these alarm bells are going off in my head and says, this is not a normal thing for there to never be conflict. So I immediately I'm thinking, okay, has apathy set in? Has disconnection set in? Or are one of these passive sort of couples who never really address big issues in their relationship, which could be worse. So yes, I do think that conflict can be bad in a relationship, especially if it's turned toxic, where there's contempt and criticism and all these other negative things, but it is not universally bad. And it, in many cases, can be, it can indicate some amount of stability in a relationship. So I don't know if that really busts the myth. It just, we're expanding on the myth and saying, hey, it is true in some cases, but in many other cases, it's not.
Right. I think for me, where this one kind of came into my brain was the thing that, like, the whole fairy tale, right? If you love each other enough, then you never fight and you just always get along and you're completely compatible, right? And so then the first time you fight when you're newlyweds, you're like, wait, what just happened, right? And it's just this myth that, you know, you're always going to get along and you're always going to see things eye to eye and you're never going to fight. Like Mark said, a healthy relationship has some level of healthy conflict or disagreement. It's just part of life. And so Mark, would you agree that there is some level of conflict occasionally in your marriage?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So I like, here's the thing. One of the things that Jen and I are really proud of is like we're saying, hey, we are really easygoing and we tend not to have a lot of conflict with people in general. But we do have fights. There are sometimes where I'm angry at Jen or vice versa. And like I said earlier, if there is no conflict, something wrong is going on. Someone's voice is not being heard, or someone is really holding on to some resentment underneath it all, or you're sweeping problems under the rug and not addressing them. I would say it's much more of an indication that something is wrong if no conflict is happening.
Agreed. And for me, I would say that we are recovering, working towards become recovered pursuer avoider dynamic that Mark, that was like my marriage for about 8-9 years, right? The bulk of our marriage was in this dynamic of conflict. I was the pursuer, he was the avoider. I would engage with volatility and he would pull away, all of that. And so coming on the other side of it, again, these are skills that you can learn. Conflict resolution is the goal, right? How to resolve conflict. The goal isn't that you're never going to have conflict, because that's unrealistic. And if you have that belief, you will be unhappy. And so that's not a reason to think that your relationship is doom and gloom and that it cannot be resolved, because it can. We just need to understand how to how to effectively
there we go. That's
resolve these issues. Awesome. Beautiful. Well, thank you, Mark. And thank you everyone for joining. I saw many of you over in the Thriving Marriage. And so I appreciate that. Thank you for your comments there. We will reach out to you personally if you so desire to talk further about how to get some resolution with what you're going on there. And next week, we're going to share with you how to break destructive cycles. I saw several of your destructive cycles, right? We've got alcoholism, affairs, pulling away, moving 1,000 miles away, all of those destructive cycles. We're going to give you some solutions on how to break those destructive cycles now.
Great.
So thank you, Mark. Okay. Thank you, everyone, for watching.
See you, everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.